meeting to order. If you please rise for the flag meeting. First item on the agenda is a public comment period, and I have one request. Miguel Donoso.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to speak in regard to the agriculture and the importance of this county, because I know it's the number one industry area with economic and money is one of the biggest. The economic is the agriculture. But at the same time, the farm workers, specifically Mexican-American, this valley, are not the number one. So I want to speak to you in regard to the Modesto B in November 8th, where you have the paper in hand, in regard to the importance of the new immigration law is supposed to be presented to the Congress. But at the same time, I want to speak to you and request, because we have Mr. Cardoza in the county as a congressman in this valley. I believe the board of supervisors is a very important vehicle to request to Mr. Cardoza what we're going to do with the immigration law, if he's going to help us. I believe very strongly, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, that you have two members right now, Mr. DeMartini and Mr. Manfield, in agriculture business. But Hispanics and Mexican American in this valley are not being helped in regard to better job and better conditions. Because of immigration is not in the right direction right now. We're now with a new Democratic, I'm sorry to say that, with a new Democratic in the Blue House. I believe strongly that we can do something better. And I have a question to you, Mr. Chairman and board members, that you guys can request a letter or a petition or whatever you are responsible to request to Mr. Cardoza to be more sensitive and more to have the value of what you represent. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who's in the audience that did not give me a request to speak at this particular section? If not, then I would like to welcome, I would like to welcome students from a government class at Beyer High School. I don't know how long you're going to stay, but you're welcome to stay as long as you like. The next item on the agenda is the consent calendar. Does any member have any item they wish to remove from the consent calendar? If not, then we need a motion.
Also moved. Second.
We have a motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Next item, item 14, acceptance of the Stanislaus County Children and Family Commission's annual report.
Good morning, or good afternoon, good evening, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Ken.
Where you
Patton.
Been?
Yeah. I'll get oriented here in a minute. We'll be appearing before you tonight in a couple of roles, but first in my role as chairman of the Stanislaus County Children and Families Commission. I joined the commission about 18 months ago, and as things would have it in their bylaws, it was my turn to be the chair shortly, and so I assumed that in August. With me today are the executive director of the Children and Families Commission, Mr. John Sims, and he'll be doing our PowerPoint and as well as other things, and Dan Souza, who is appearing as a citizen member of the Children and Families Commission. We would just acknowledge that several of our contractors in the audience tonight, and we're appreciative of the work that they do and of their participation tonight. I'd like to start with covering the mission of the Children and Families Commission. We are dedicated to promoting the development and well-being of children 0 through 5 or birth through 5 in Stanislaus County. And tonight we'll be telling you about some of the projects that we have to take on that task. I'd like to first talk to you about who the current members of your commission are, and they are appointed by you as the board. They are Vicki Bauman, who is the school representative, Mr. David Cooper, who's a community representative, Denise Hunt, who's the Director of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, Bill O'Brien, your representative from the board and from District 1, Nellie Paredes-Walsborn, who is a community representative, myself from Community Services Agency, Mr. George Skoll, who is a community representative, Dan Souza, and Dr. Walker from the Health Department. About the commission, just by way of background, the commission was a result of Proposition 10 placed before the voters in 1998, and what it did was add a 50-cent tax on cigarettes and other tobaccos per sale, and it was distributed based on the number of live births in each county. Approximately $6.5 million annually comes to Stanislaus County for programs to serve children 0 through 5. It is a revenue source that we anticipate will be decreasing as tobacco use decreases. So we are cognizant of that, and our spending plan reflects it. We are administered by a 9-member commission, again appointed by you as the Board of Supervisors, and overall our mission again is to improve the health and well-being of young children and their families. I'd like to tell you a little bit about who we serve in Stanislaus County. Our population, we have 8,000 births annually, or 22 new children a day in our county. Our population of this 0 to 5 group is just about 51,000, and that's about 10%, or 1 in 10 of our county residents fall into this group. And you can see the ethnicity of those children. About 22% of them live within the federal poverty guidelines, and of the live births, 7.4 per 1,000 we experience an infant mortality rate or death of those children. And I think we want to contrast that with the state average of 5.3, so it's an area that the commission focuses a great number of its resources on. And now John will tell you a little bit about our spending plan and budget.
Actually, we would like to talk about who we serve in 0506.
I'm sorry, John. I was one slide ahead. We have 25 programs that we fund and interact with countywide, and we present, then do about 250,000 direct service contacts with through those 25 programs with children 0 to 5 and their families. Those contacts occur in places like classrooms, in home visits, in case management visits where we're organizing services or making referrals or arranging follow-up on services that families have had. And you can see the demography of who is served, 55% Hispanic, 28% Caucasian, and then the other groups from there. Also, we wanted to talk to you about the language and age of participants. English is the primary language of 57% of our customers, 26% Spanish. We are unable to determine the language, and 17% is just not recorded, and then you can see the other dialects and languages that are spoken by the recipients of the program. Also, 59% of that 250,000 a year contacts are to actual children then birth to 5, with 37% to parents and other caregivers.
The commission's budget is a little bit over $13 million for the 05-06 fiscal year, and we've prepared here a horizontal bar chart to try and group our expenditures according to the 5 strategic areas that are in the commission's strategic plan. And you see we have health as being the number one expenditure that's made, along with child care, emotional health, safety, and the fifth strategic plan area is school readiness. family resource centers you'll hear about in a few more minutes in greater detail. And we're also showing administration and evaluation. Evaluation is required under the terms of Prop 10. And as you see, it accounts for approximately 1% of the budget expenditures for 05-06. Now, not all of those expenditures were made during 05-06, and they were not made for some very positive reasons. The FRCs, the Family Resource Centers, were starting up during 05-06, and there was a certain lag time that we experienced getting the money expended by those contracts. And the Healthy Cubs program was not spending all of the money that was allocated to them. Part of their charge is to provide direct health services to children that are 300% of the poverty level or lower. Their secondary charge is to get those children signed up to Medi-Cal, to Healthy Families, to other state-supported health programs. So the fact that they were very successful to sign these children up into those state programs meant that the local commission did not have to spend as much money as it had budgeted and allocated for Healthy Cubs. As you can see on the financial summary, we received approximately $8.5 million last year. Our expenses were $10 million. We have planned to spend this reserve down, and we continue to operate under the strategic plan and the plan of the commission to lower that reserve. As you may recall, just a few years ago, that available reserve was over $24 million. So we are making very informed and strategic decisions to bring that down. Using the state definitions, all but $2.5 million of that money has been earmarked for strategic plan goals. The state calls that committed funds. In 06-07, you can see that our revenue has decreased, partially because of the smoking rates going down, and partially because during 05-06, we actually received 13 payments instead of 12 payments. Our expenditures will be a little over $11 million, and we predict that the available revenue or our reserves will be down as low as $18.3 million at the end of 06-07.
Because there have been some attention and questions at the state level about Prop 10 Commission work, we wanted to, first of all, talk to you about our procurement process here in Stanislaus County. When it comes to purchasing services or having opportunities to bid on available grants, we follow and have adopted the Stanislaus County Services Procurement Policies. Additionally, we are annually audited by the County Auditor's Office. We've had no audit findings, and we've had no comments either through the audits or from the public about our procurement process, and when we receive recommendations in the audit, we've implemented those. Now, I will just kind of contrast that to what's been going on at the State Commission level. Prop 82, known as the Preschool for All initiative, drew some attention for the State Commission entering into the procurement of advertising for that initiative. First of all, we'd like to highlight that the State Commission is totally independent from the County Commissions. And regarding that question, there was an audit performed by the State Bureau of Audits. Their findings were that it was legal to use those Prop 10 funds for advertising, but it did not follow the state procurement procedures, even though they had the General Services Administration's approval for that. So it was somewhat confused, but certainly it didn't rise to the level that it was without some issue. And we just wanted to, I think, go on record of we've not had those procurement issues here, and the State Commission is certainly independent of us. And it's a state and not a local issue. Dan's going to cover some of the highlights of our commission work and of our contractors this year.
Thank you, Jim. I have the pleasure of highlighting some of the accomplishments, as Jim mentioned. I know one of the priorities of your board is to improve access to health care for citizens and residents of Stanislaus County. The Healthy Cups program is directed to that priority. The Healthy Cups program provides health access coverage for children 0 to 5 who are 300% of poverty or below. In this past year, the program has enrolled almost 3,500 children, 0 to 5, and provided 6,500 health care visits to those children. Another accomplishment in the area of child safety is that the commission has funded an increase in access to child abuse programs of the Children's Crisis Center by opening a fifth site in Turlock. Another accomplishment in the area of safety is a contract that we have with the Center for Human Services called On the Safe Side. This program provides bicycle and pedestrian safety education to children. This past year, almost 6,200 children went through that education program, and they fitted and distributed 1,343 helmets to those children. The CARES program, Comprehensive Approach to Raising Educational Standards, is a program that provides training for child care providers in San Jose County with the overall goal of improving the quality of child care in the county. 629 caregivers received training and education this past year. 272 of them qualified for a stipend program that is part of CARES. And almost 800 students received academic counseling or permit advising. Permit advising is helping individuals who want to open child care facilities or daycare facilities. As was mentioned before by John, another major initiative of the school readiness program. The program goals are to improve the readiness of children to learn when they reach kindergarten. One of the areas is a kinder enrichment class, which is when children actually go to a enrichment class in the afternoon after they've been to kindergarten in the morning. The programs also do some pre-kindergarten programs. These are like six-week summer camps for children who are going to be entering kindergarten. And a major focus is providing a great deal of health and other support services to families and children to prepare them for school when they get to kindergarten. The school readiness program has been the focus of a three-year longitudinal study that has produced some very interesting results. Of the children who did not attend preschool but participated in the school readiness programs, they had an overall increase in their kinder readiness scores of almost 12% compared to children who did not participate in the program. Also, 46% of the families served by the school readiness programs read to their children every day, an increase of 8%. And we know from research that reading to children is a major factor in school success. Other accomplishments include in the area of mental and behavioral health, a contract with the County Behavioral Health Recovery Services and a subcontract with Sierra Vista Children and Family Services, which provided almost 1,500 children with behavioral problems with consultation and direct treatment services. The commission also was the first county department to offer user-designed informational maps on the internet. You can look on the commission site and have a link to those even now. And finally, most recently, and you're going to hear more about this in a few minutes, is a major focus on supporting a countywide network of family resource centers. These are local-based centers with neighbors helping neighbors. They provide one-stop resources for families in a friendly environment, which is more easily accessible and friendly for families to utilize. Services such as health, mental health, safety, child development, and lots of information and referral are provided at those sites. A partnership with the Community Service Agency also contracts with them to provide a type of child welfare response called differential response, and you're going to hear about that from Kim at this point.
So just in closing, the Children and Families Commission annual report, we are distributing to you at your desk there a copy of our annual report. We've tried to keep it brief. I think you'll find a listing of the services that we've discussed in there, and I just want to thank all the commissioners for their work this year. I'd like to thank Supervisor O'Brien. He represents the board well on this, a very active participant on our commission. I'd like to thank the staff of the commission. They help us in an extraordinary way plan, administer, and evaluate the services that we discussed. And they take their work very seriously, and we're pleased with their performance. And with that, we'll just stop for any questions you might have about the annual report or things that we've raised at this point.
Okay, any board member have any comment or question? If not, then we... Yes.
We have close to 55%, I think, is the percentage for the Hispanic children. Then you have, I think it was 57. And then you have, in the language, you have 29. I wonder how really you serve the Hispanic community in regard to the staff members that are supposed to work with the families and the cultural values. I wonder, too, if the report is in Spanish. You have a report in Spanish, sir?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
If you'll just turn it over and start, if one side you start through it, it will read in English. If you turn on the other way, it reads in Spanish.
I'm asking because I never see that report in my hands. But I'm focused more on everything else as the staff. And the contract and subcontract that you give it to these different agencies. I wonder how the affirmative action is working and how many really professionals, bilingual culture, not only Spanish surname, but really bilingual culture, working in your staff, sir, and doing the job they're supposed to do. And I wonder how many members of the commission are Hispanic. I know Mr. Sosa is Portuguese descent. I wonder who really is bilingual culture in that commission. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yes, respond.
Mr. Chairman, we can answer that now. At least one member of the commission is bicultural and bilingual and works in a bicultural, bilingual agency with a long history of serving migrant families. The commission staff it also has bilingual, bicultural representatives on the staff. Our family resource centers, as an example of our principal contractors, that's a requirement that they are able to communicate with the families they serve and the neighborhoods they serve in the language. And we'll have other staff available to maybe comment on that. As a newer member of the commission, I guess I can just say that I believe that the commission fully understands that to serve parents and children in this community and young children, that we have to communicate in the language and through the cultural style of that family if we're to engage them. And I think it's something that always we can be diligent on improving, but I think as I look at the array of services in our community, the commission does a good job of that.
Okay, thank you.
And I just will add also, one of the newest contracts we have is with a group called El Concilio, and who didn't have much of a presence in San Jose County until recently, and now we've joined up with them, and they're helping us provide service. So it is a good partnership.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, then we need a motion to accept the report.
Motion to adopt.
Second.
Motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Thank you.
And I'm just going to stay at the podium and roll right into
it. Oh, good to see you, Dan.
Thank you.
Acceptance, let's see, next item is acceptance of a first-year report on, well, wait a minute, we have a public hearing, don't we?
If we need to...
You can go ahead and do your report. We'll get to the public hearing shortly.
Thank you.
Is this a very long report? Let me ask you that first.
We think it's probably about 12 minutes.
All right, let's go.
Okay. Joining me now are, first of all, our PowerPoint developer, Tim Martinez from Community Services Agency, and Jeanette Mondin, who is a manager at Community Service Agency, who, along with Christine Soeth, have really shepherded this Family Resource Center partnership with the Children and Families Commission. They've shepherded it along, and our goal tonight is to do a couple things, to have you understand differential response and its role in the family resource centers, and then to talk to you about the collective first-year outcomes from our partnership with Prop 10 and CSA. So first, just some quick history. In October of 2004, we had a work group, the two agencies, if you will, Community Services Agency and Children and Families Commission, said, we both think family resource centers have a lot to offer. Let's figure out a way to get them started on our collective work. Actually, Rick Robinson met with the group. It was your second week at work, I think, Rick, and gave us the charge to help get us started. We developed a request for proposals. We had a lot of family resource of the existing family resource centers comment on that, look at it, and in January of 2005, we issued the request for proposals. And here's the basic layout. Community Services Agency committed $1.5 million a year for 3 years to have family resource centers be in a position to take certain types of child protection referrals with a very low risk threshold. And the Children and Families Commission committed $3 million over 3 years so that families would have access at a neighborhood level to the types of programs and services that would make a difference in the lives of their young children. And so together, we committed $4.5 million for 3 years. We're going to show you now a quick map of the county and where these family resource centers have sprung up. Some were existing, but we've added to them. Can you go back on that, Tim, just a second? I'm sorry. Airport Neighbors United in Modesto. Then Sierra Vista, Child and Family Services Drop-In Center. Aspira Behavioral Health in Turlock. Oak Valley Family Support Network in Oakdale. The Parent Resource Center in Modesto. The Ceres Partnership for Healthy Children in Ceres. The Houston Collaborative, which serves Houston and places beyond. Newman Family Resource Center. The Westside Community Alliance in Patterson. And the Grayson Wesley Family Resource Center. So you can see that we've done a pretty good job of blanketing the county with access to these family resource centers. I wanted to tell you why this partnership was important for Community Services Agency. First, we have a mission and a value base that goes with that to, first of all, create child safety. And there's a lot of ways to do that, but one way is early intervention. And I think under the Healthy Communities priority for the board, you've really asked us to look at focusing our resources on early intervention and prevention. We also have a responsibility to create permanence for children so that they don't have a lot of changes in their life, that if they can be safe and stable in their families, that's where they ought to be reared. And finally, we have the goal of understanding family strengths and building on those to help parents be the best they can be. Now, I've previously talked to you about the condition that existed in 1995 where over 800 children were in foster care in our county, and that seemed to be the only strategy that we basically had at hand for addressing safety. What we've done is entered into a series of partnerships. The first was to, with CSU Stanislaus, their social worker department, to train social workers for us. And now over 80% of the people who work in our Children and Family Services Division hold a master's degree in social work. It makes a difference with their good training. Next, we focused on co-locating services for families in need. So people that used to work for Dan and Denise at BHRS now work in the CSA building. They're still BHRS employees, but they're co-located. The customer doesn't see have to show up at a different door. And the same is true with the Health Services Agency. We have many nurses and other health professionals working and are co-located. Then we realized that some types of child abuse and particularly sexual abuse really required a very specialized intervention. So we set about creating the care center, the multidisciplinary focus on sexual abuse victims. Then we set out, because of our understanding of the research, that 60 to 70% of all serious child maltreatment involves parental drug abuse. We then helped with our partner agencies of creating such programs as drug-exposed infants with HSA, the first steps with BHRS and Sierra Vista, families in partnership, and clean and sober living environments with places like the Redwood Center. And so we arrived at a point that we had stability in our programs and we were ready to say, all right, what's the next step? What's the next logical thing to front load services to get to families early? And that's where some of our prevention strategies, like partnerships with the Children's Crisis Center and activities of the Child Abuse Prevention Council came in. But then
we hit on the same idea that the Prop 10 Commission did, and that's let's jumpstart and help these family resource centers get going. Now, the next slide will just talk to you roughly about the two parallel efforts. You had the public child protection process going on that received about 11,000 referrals a year, but Stanislaus County, just like every other county, screened out about a third of those. They simply didn't rise to the seriousness or definition that they should have had an investigation, but we were just not going out on those. We then had those that we did investigate. We started, we did a case planning effort, we engaged the family, and then we started to provide services. For several years, there's been a family resource center movement in our county that has been doing the same thing. They've been accepting referrals. They've been engaging families directly. They've been providing services. And then after getting a few services, families would come back and they'd say, hey, I want more help from you. They would re-engage. And then we would find them providing services on an ongoing basis. What this linkage between child protection process and family resource center has done is have that third of cases that were screened out as not meeting the level of needing investigation go directly to a family resource center. And Jeanette will talk to you about what differential response is and how its language creeps into this process.
Good evening. Differential response is a process in which we respond to reports of child maltreatment or abuse and neglect. When a report comes into the hotline, those screening is done, a risk and safety assessment, and those that are determined where the children are there's no or low risk of abuse and neglect, those are the ones that are referred to the family resource centers, and the family resource centers now contact those families. These are the ones that we had screened out previously. Path two is the other part of our community services agency response. When we determine that a child's at moderate risk of abuse and neglect, we continue to go out and respond to those cases, but in many cases we're responding with a community partner, that this community partner may be the appropriate source of services for that family. And that response is done within 10 days. Then path three continues for those that are high risk or where children are determined to be unsafe based on the call that comes in. And our agency continues to respond to those, and our response time is within 2 hours. Now, based on that, for those on path two and path three, we do a risk and safety assessment, and we determine what's the appropriate level of service for the family. So for those situations where children are at no or low risk of abuse or neglect, as with path one or potentially in path two and three, families then receive services through the family resource centers. And for those where children are at medium or high risk or where children are currently unsafe, Community Service Agency continues to provide services to those families, either through voluntary services, family maintenance, families in partnership, or through court action. I'd like to invite Francine DiCiano, who's the Executive Director of the Parent Resource Center, to just share briefly a few words with you about the work that they've been doing in the Family Resource Center.
Good evening. I'm Francine DiCiano. It's a pleasure to be here this evening. Parent Resource Center is a nonprofit child abuse prevention agency, and we have been providing parenting education and in-home volunteer mentoring for families with children 0 to 5. And we've been doing family resource center type services in our county since 1992. And we were very pleased and honored to be awarded the Family Resource Center Differential Response Grant. It's given us the ability to improve our programs to families. And I think I can describe these improvements in 5 words, and that's expand, enhance, educate, empower, and engage. These 5 words indicate our ability to provide additional services and programs that promote the one-stop shopping concept of the Family Resource Center. And this grant allowed us to serve over 500 adults and 400 children in 2005 and 2006, which is a 25% increase in the number of families served in 2004. Some of the services that we provide and some of our strengths are our prenatal and perinatal services, and we like to say we make a difference from the start. We start young with our families. Our parenting education, which provides child abuse prevention services through a variety of education, classes, and support. Our in-home visitation, which is really our strength. We've been doing in-home visitation since the early 70s as part of public health, and so that really helps in our success with differential response. And we have some successful collaborations in differential response with Sierra Vista, Children and Family Services, and also with Airport Neighbors United. We have a mental health component with Sierra Vista and also Leaps and Bounds. We provide car seat trainings and car seat checks and car seats to families in our community. Our other collaborative partners are Stanislaus Literacy Center, which provides family literacy programs. And also we're involved with the Houston Family Resource Center and Turlock Family Resource Center, providing Spanish parenting along with health insurance enrollment. So we do a lot of services wrapped into one. And they'll go over the outcomes here in a few minutes, but I think really some of our successes are really truly what happens with our families. And we've really experienced a lot of success in differential response, working with families, connecting them to resources, and preventing child abuse and neglect by engaging the families early without letting a problem get too far. And we've seen children blossom developmentally with parent education and bonding and school readiness. So we have really seen a lot of great improvement in our families and our children. And not only does the Family Resource Center grant, differential response grant, connect our families to services and programs in Stanislaus County, but it's really encouraged lasting collaborations between agencies and service providers, and we all work well together providing these services throughout the county. So I want to thank you for allowing the Parent Resource Center to be part of this countywide team.
Okay, thank you.
We'll move right to our outcomes, and these are, understand that around 800 families with 1,300 children were referred as a result of a differential response, a low-risk case that went from CSA to a Family Resource Center, and the others were walk-ins, or just the people that knew of the Family Resource Center and said, I think I want to get services there. Each of these outcomes will show the number of people served. So in this first bullet, it's 1,747 children's families served, or children served in those families, of a potential 3,309. So 53% of the children's families received a comprehensive assessment, meaning the family said, come on in, talk to me about what you see, what my needs are, and help connect me with the services that I'm going to need to be successful as a parent. I think this is remarkable when you consider it's a voluntary thing to open up your home to this, and Child Protection was the one that referred you. And we know that of this 53%, 82% who said yes to a family assessment were referred by Child Protection. So maybe we're changing the nature of that in our community a little bit. 64% of the children's families who were assessed and participated in ongoing case management, meaning they said, yes, come back and visit me, help connect me with services, ask me how I'm doing, check back with me, again, a voluntary service. There were 26% of the children's caregivers who said, I'd like to know more about parenting, and I'd like to be in a support group with other parents to help me learn from what they know and to connect with me and as I try and improve my parenting skills. So 26% said, yeah, I want to do that. And then 90% of those who did participate, and they were surveyed and they said, yeah, I know more about parenting. I've got better knowledge now as a result of that. 37% of the caregivers were screened for depression, and then, of the caregivers who were screened for depression, 37% said were referred then to other services and mental health services that were needed. And we know that depression left untreated can cause a parent to be distant, non-engaged, and cause it's one of the causes of child neglect, so we're happy about that. 100% of the women who came in for the assessment time and were pregnant and did not have a health care provider then were connected with a prenatal care within 60 days. And we think that helps improve those birth outcomes. And next, 78% of the children who were not enrolled in a health insurance program at the time that their family was assessed did become enrolled within 60 days. And finally, 89% of the children who didn't have a health care provider at the time of their family who were assessed were connected with a health care provider. And I think some of these things were achievable because of the partnerships, because with Medi-Cal as a part of CSA, with the Health Services Agency, with Golden Valley Clinic, to get those services rolling. And our final area that we'll talk to you about is the cost per child. When we took a look at all the participants that received specific services, divided our costs, the case management came out to $139. That's per family that received it, not per incident. $74 for parent education, $70 for mental health, and $100 for the school readiness activities. We've been the curiosity of the state in many ways. This next slide will show then the presentations that we've been asked to do and the numerous counties that have either visited us or asked us to visit them and do a consultation with them and peer mentoring. So we're happy with our first year results. We appreciate your support in getting it going. And we'll stop, and if there's time for any questions, we'll take them. I think I did more than 12 minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Supervisor Grover? A couple questions on the outcomes she had there. You mentioned that 78% of the children that didn't have health insurance received it, and 89%, I believe, that didn't have a doctor saw a doctor.
Yes.
Can you describe to me the environment that 22% of the kids wouldn't be able to, or their caregiver chose not to get them health insurance, and 11% chose not to take their child to the doctor when it was available?
Jeanette, you want to take a shot at that?
I'll try. I think that there are some additional families who are probably connected to health insurance or to a provider that just weren't accomplished within 60 days. So there were some families who all were in the process of being connected, but those connections hadn't been made by the 60-day timeline that we were trying to work for and monitor. And in terms of connected to a health care provider, they may have taken them to a doctor, but I think what the real goal is to try to get families connected to a doctor that they see on a regular basis for preventative health care rather than just emergency urgent care.
And maybe a follow-up, 102 of your mothers that were pregnant that hadn't seen a doctor got to a doctor.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
Exactly the right number we'd like to see.
Yes.
Do you think that on a continued basis, this could eat into our infant mortality or reduce that infant mortality ratio that we have?
One of the other projects of the Children and Families Commission is the infant mortality study. And one of the models that we heard reported from those people at Health Services Agency, the researchers that are doing this, talk about a social model of having many pregnant women come in for, you know, all on the same day to see their obstetrician, and also to get a lot of counseling and share experiences while they're doing that. And I think we think that that model has some promise of eating into that infant mortality rate. We're learning more specifics about it, and obesity being one of the, or weight gain during pregnancy being one of the key factors that Dr. Walker has been educating us to.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Not, we need a motion for approval of this report.
Also moved.
Second.
We have a motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So ordered.
Thank you.
Thank you
time.
Very much. Appreciate it. Now turn to the 6:40 p.m. public hearing to consider approval of the Stanislaus County District Attorney and Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department expenditure plans for the State Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Fund.
Good evening, Chairman Simon, Supervisors, CEO Robinson, and County Council Krosnick. Dan Wirtz, I'm Business Manager for the Sheriff's Office. I'm before you this evening to conduct the public hearing of the District Attorney and Sheriff's Department 2006-2007 Spending Plan for the Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Funding, SLESF. A little background on this. In 1996, the state legislature passed and the governor signed Assembly Bill 3229, the Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Act. The purpose of this law is to ensure public safety, which is also one of your board's priorities. Stanislaus County receives SLESF from the state through the California Citizens Option for Public Safety, COPS program. This is on an annual basis. California Governmental Code 30061 requires that Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors convey a public hearing to appropriate these funds for frontline law enforcement, criminal prosecution, or county jail construction and operation. This hearing must be separate and apart from the county's budget process. The county's allocation and proposed spending plan for 2006-2007 is $562,309. This spending plan is consistent with previous years, and the plan calls for the district attorney receiving $169,607 for partial funding of a criminal investigator and two legal clerks to assist in criminal investigation. The sheriff's detention receiving $169,607, and this will fund 1.26 custodial sergeants. The sheriff's operation will receive $223,095, funding 1.38 operational sergeants. The 2006-2007 fiscal year budget anticipated continuation of the SLESF funding. And since this revenue is used to offset the cost of positions that were previously added to the budget, no recommendation is being made to increase appropriations or anticipated revenues at this time.
Okay. Any questions? This is a public hearing. This matter is open to the public. Is there anyone in the audience who is here to speak on this item? Seeing none, return it to the board for action.
Need a motion?
I need a motion.
Second.
I have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So ordered. Thank you. Okay, we turn to correspondence.
This board has received Form 10-Q of Covanta Holding Corporation for the third quarter ended September 30th, 2006.
We refer this to the Department of Environmental Resources.
This board has received a letter from the Copeland Enterprises, Inc., notifying the county of their plan to sell or close the company's retail location, including the store at 3501 McHenry, Suite G1 in Modesto, California, beginning in mid-November and ending in January of 2007, pursuant to the Workers' Adjustment and Retaining Notification Act.
We refer this to the Alliance Network and Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of these claims and refer them to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Board reports. Does any board member have a report this evening? Mr. Rover.
In light of the memo that we received from Council, I would like to acknowledge that I attended, on behalf of this board, the Mental Health Board meeting last Thursday.
Okay, thank you. Any legislative, fiscal, and management report?
Not this evening.
Not this evening. This is the last item on the agenda, and this board meeting is adjourned. Did you guys learn anything today?